chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make heaven the middle of it. Rest make heaven the middle. We are. Rest make heaven.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. We've got a very sensational book, and it's a very important book. And I made special arrangements to not only bring in the main author, but also the co-author, because I believe both have a lot of experience and a lot of research and a lot of effort in this subject. The name of the book is Confessions of a DC Madam, The Politics of Sex, Lies, and Blackmail. And it's written by Henry W. Benson, and the co-author is Nick Bryan, who's done a lot of previous research over the years in this area. Welcome to our program, Henry Benson.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
And your background, let me also bring in Nick Bryan. Welcome to our program also.
Well, thanks for having me.
Okay, let's start with Henry Benson first. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into this, being called later the D.C. Madam and so forth, and then we'll switch over to Nick Bryan and have him tell us about his background, okay?
Sure. I ran the largest gay escort service that's ever been exposed in Washington, D.C., and my ultimate downfall was precipitated by the fact that I provided escorts to a CIA asset named Craig Spence, who used my escorts to blackmail politicians and other power brokers. And ultimately, I became the fall guy for a sprawling conspiracy whose cover-up was engineered at the pinnacle of the Bush 1 administration.
Right. In your book here, there was this the name of it, Confessions of a D.C. Madam. Was there not later on a madam, a woman by the name of Paltry?
That's right. Both Deborah Jean Palfrey and I were both dubbed the D.C. Madam by the press.
Okay. And so now, now Nick, come on in and make a few comments or color comments on this. Where did you come in on the writing of this book?
Well, I've known Henry for a number of years, and Henry has been pummeled by the government and also the media. And he called me one day and asked me if I wanted to collaborate about a book on his life. And I knew Henry's life very well because of other research and other things I had written, and I jumped on the opportunity to collaborate with Henry Vincent. And we ultimately forged Confessions of a D.C. Madam, The Politics of Sex, Lies, and Blackmail. And I think it's a very important story because it shows that American politicians are being blackmailed. And that's something that really doesn't come out in the media today. Americans think that their political system has become a wayward aberration of the ideals that it was originally founded upon. But they think it's like PAC money that is turned our political system into an aberration. But in many cases, it's actually blackmail. And Henry's book delineates that very, very well.
Yeah, Henry, you actually, when you started this, you were in the funeral service business up in the Washington, D.C. area. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. I have a degree in mortuary science, and I was working as a funeral director in Washington, D.C.
And then there was an opportunity for you to buy purchase an existing escort service. Is that the story?
That's right. I came from a small town in West Virginia, moved to D.C., and some friends and I from the mortuary were going out for an evening on the town. We went to an exotic dance bar. I met an escort, and I'd never even known an escort, never even knew what they were before. And we got to be friends, and over the next couple of weeks, I became very aware of what he was doing he introduced me to his associate, and it just turned out the service was for sale. So I ended up buying it, and that's the way it happened.
Well, I think you expanded it through additional telephone lines, and you made it much more efficient than before. Is that correct?
That's right. I looked at the way they were operating, and I thought, wow, they're doing very well, but they run a very poorly operated business. So I looked at it, and I made some changes, and I started going through the Yellow Pages. I noticed a lot of the numbers were disconnected because this business seems to be kind of transient, and I would pay the back money, to get those telephone numbers. So I ended up with a lot of telephone ads in the phone directory. And after a while, I became the largest service in Washington, D.C.
Right. In your work there, you know, Nick made an important point just a few minutes ago, was that the Craig Spence connection, and then Larry King, I think, was there at that meeting, but not the broadcaster, but I believe the black Larry King out of Omaha, Nebraska. But at one meeting there, was it not revealed that there were hidden cameras in the Craig Spence mansion that he conducted a lot of these escapades in?
That's right. Craig called for me to come over to his house. I went over, had a beautiful house in upper northwest Washington. One thing that really catches your eye is this huge mirror when you walk in to his office, his library. And we sat there and talked, Larry King and I, along with Craig. Craig was asking me many things about my life and about this business and customers, things of that nature. After we talked for a while, Larry got up, walked over to what I thought was a closet, motioned for me to come over, and inside the closet is another door. And then I could see all this recording equipment. He played back what I had just said. Then it became very apparent what was really going on. He would have these lavish parties in his house, always call for call boys to come over, had beautiful people there. And he was recording all of it. So his entire house was wired for blackmail.
Right. About what year was this that this operation was underway?
From the mid-80s until about 1990. So the mid-80s.
I see. And the Palfrey lady, when she was suicided or committed suicide, about what date would that be involved in this overall?
Well, Miss Palfrey, she was the D.C. madam in 2008. So about 20 years after me.
Oh, that was much later.
That's
my
right.
My gosh. Now in this scheme, this blackmail scheme, there were some of the top people in our government, what, military and top political leaders? Is that what you're saying here?
That's right. And I'm very comfortable naming names now because I ran an escort service during the Reagan and Bush 1 administration. And under Reagan, no gay civil rights legislation was passed. Reagan once declared that homosexuals were sick. And there were many high-profile people. My best-known client was probably Donald Gregg, who was the U.S. ambassador to South Korea. And William Casey, was being the director of the CIA, would have been the best-known client. I'm sorry, William Casey.
Okay, and the proclivities that some of these people had was very, very abnormal and very weird. Is that correct?
Well, that's right. William Casey had this ritual. He liked to be rubbed down in oil, and that's right. There were some.
Yeah, we've got to be careful in our language here because we're going out to the public and we have to be careful. There's all kinds of different age groups listing. Now, Nick Bryan, this Larry King connection, I believe that Henry was there at the mansion, Craig Spence's mansion, and Larry King was there and also Craig Spence. But how does Larry King enter into the D.C. area? What was it from the Franklin scandal? Is that right? Yeah, Nick.
Hello.
Yeah, Nick. How does Larry King enter into this from Omaha, Nebraska, into the D.C. area? Or what?
I seem to have lost you for a little bit. Well, Larry King and Craig Spence had a business together. They were in the business of blackmailing people. And if you wanted an escort in his early 20s or a female escort in her early 20s, they'd provide you with that. Or if you wanted children, they'd also provide you with that. So anything that a power broker that attended Spence's parties desired, they would be provided with, men, women, or children. And Larry King and Craig Spence, they were in business together as blackmail artists.
Right. Henry, you said at one time when you were meeting there with Spence, Craig Spence and Larry King, that they were requesting that you bring underage children in, but you refused to do that. Is that correct?
That's right. I refused to do that. That's one of the most sinister things that I dealt with him, and I always refused to do that.
Right. Now getting back to the Franklin scandal, you wrote a book, Nick, entitled The Franklin Scandal. Was Larry King involved in this financial scandal in Omaha, Nebraska?
Yes. Henry's book touches on that, Confessions of a DC Madam. Henry's book gets into the really dirty side of D.C. politics, which Larry King was involved in, as I said earlier, with Craig Spence. So Confessions of a D.C. Madam really puts the reader into the most sordid side of D.C. politics. And that's why I think it's a great read. There's never been a book like it that puts a reader right into a blackmail operation that's going on in Washington, D.C.
Right. Now, Henry, you got entangled into, because it was connected to the CIA, some of these operations, then did you not experience some really legal problems in prison time? Is that right?
I'm sorry. We must have a bad connection. I couldn't really hear that.
Yeah, okay. Henry, since this involves some kind of a CIA connection, possibly through Craig Spence, did you experience some legal problems and some prison time?
Yes, I did. I was charged in a 43-count indictment and was facing 295 years in prison. And I did end up going to prison for 16 months.
Right. Now later on, did not your mother was quite an entrepreneur. Was there another second prison that was visited on you or what?
That's right. For conspiracy to impede the IRS in collection, Nick had actually contacted me about a year before that happened and said, you know, I think you're going to be going back again because everyone else did. I said, that's impossible. There's no way that can't happen. And, but it did happen.
Now, later on, you would strike out on a new career. Is that right?
That's right. I went back to school and got a master's degree in integrated marketing communications from West Virginia University. And I'm also a commercially rated pilot in airplanes and helicopters. So I've done quite a bit in my life.
I think Henry is a great example of how someone has really turned their life around. I mean, Henry is a poster boy for a reformed felon. And despite all the stuff that Henry's had to deal with, all the persecution by both the government and the media, he's become a very successful, legitimate businessman. And it's truly unfortunate that he has to endure media persecution up to this very day.
Right. You know, Trine Day are friends of mine that published this book. And Chris Milligan is one of the most stand-up guys you'll ever know and meet. And he comes out of a CIA family himself. His father was CIA when he was growing up. So Chris Milligan took on this book to help y'all really expose some of the problems. Now, does this go back centuries or millenniums, this boy man or this kind of pedophilia type of activity at the highest levels of power? What are some of your perspectives on that, Henry?
Well, I think it does. I think it started before I was around, and I think it's still going on today. I think black male plays a much more integral role in the American political process, but black mailers and their black male targets would never divulge such misconduct for the obvious reasons. Black mailers would be subjected to criminal prosecution, and their black male targets would be subjected to either prosecution or persecution for the conduct that led them to be blackmailed in the first place. So I think political blackmail is almost never made public, and if it is, it's years after the fact. Just look at J. Edgar Hoover, for example, because he blackmailed people for decades, and his blackmailing only emerged years after his death. And I think Larry Craig is an example of a congressman who was possibly compromised. Craig was in D.C. for nearly 30 years as a U.S. representative and a senator. And given Craig's status as a conservative Republican, if word of his shadow life leaked out, it would have been political suicide and public disgrace. But his runaway libido compelled him to take just mind-boggling risks. And I find it impossible to believe that Craig's homosexual exploits were unnoticed by the blackmail ring that I provided with escorts, because I provided Craig with escorts, and the ring was well aware of my patrons. And I'm of the belief that the best explanation that can be offered concerning Craig's brazen exploits with regards to his homosexuality is the fact that he was compromised. And I think he was mindful that his brazen exploits would be covered up.
And I just want to chime in on political blackmail here. Political blackmail.
Jump in anytime, Nick.
Political blackmail has been used by kingdoms, empires, syndicates, and unscrupulous groups since time immemorial. Throughout World War II and the Cold War, intelligence agents carefully monitored their peers because the potential for blackmail was always there. And the CIA and the State Department never knowingly hired homosexuals due to their susceptibility to blackmail. So blackmail has really played an integral role in the American landscape. And one of the things that's come out, Henry was talking about J. Edgar Hoover, and one of the things that's come out is that J. Edgar Hoover purportedly blackmailed John F. Kennedy into accepting Lyndon Johnson as his running mate in 1960. That's according to Kennedy Secretary Evelyn Lincoln. So, and Kennedy was murdered 3 years later, and Lyndon Johnson ascended to the presidency. And Kennedy originally planned on tapping Missouri Senator Stuart Symington for his vice presidential running mate. So Hoover's blackmail of Kennedy radically altered the American political landscape in the 1960s. And I think that this is one example that we know about, but I think that there are a myriad of examples of political blackmail completely altering the landscape of American politics.
Henry, do you think, that's very, very good comments there, Nick. Henry, do you think that it's moved from blackmail of being gay to pedophilia activity? You think it's been stepped up now to that level? Because it looks like in the pedophilia area, that's very, very sensitive area, and people get killed when they start investigating into this area. What are your comments and thoughts?
Well, Nick can answer that question better than I can, I think.
For me, I think that blackmail is used on anyone who has a weakness. If someone is married and they're heterosexual and they're having an affair on their wife, they can be blackmailed or leveraged. I think Elliot Spitzer is a very good example of that. If you look at the Elliot Spitzer case, it's very obvious that the federal government took Elliot Spitzer down. John Edwards is also another case of someone who was having an affair. And he was outed, and that just destroyed his ability to run for president. So I think that anybody that has any type of weakness is, especially if it's sexual, is susceptible to blackmail. It doesn't apply to pedophiles. It applies to homosexuals, and it applies to married men who cheat on their wives. So anyone can be potentially blackmailed if they've got some kind of extracurricular activity going on in their lives.
Right. Henry, as far as the demographics of your customer there on this escort service, was it Democrats and Republicans and everybody in between, or left and right, or how would you characterize some of your some of the clients that you provided services to?
Well, I ran an escort service during the Bush 1 and Reagan administration, and a lot of my clients were closeted Republicans.
Okay, but that didn't, that, you know, but you're saying that this is across the board otherwise. I mean, that was your experience, basically.
That was my experience, because that's the period of time that I was in that business during Reagan and Bush 1 administration.
Now let me ask, I'm going to put a question to both of you here, and when you get into proclivities that are very weird, sexual, does it not come... have characteristics more dominant than the actual sexual part of it or something? So is there a dominant aspect sometimes to these things that are way over and above just the sexual part? What would your comments be, Henry?
I think so. And I think the most disturbing and sinister thing that I was ever exposed to was the fact that politicians and power brokers were provided with children if they had those inclinations. And I was consistently pressured by D.C. power brokers to provide child prostitutes to their power broker cronies, but I refused to do so. And the government was aware of that fact, because I told my government debriefers about an interstate pedophile network that was providing D.C. politicians and power brokers with children. But the Department of Justice, Secret Service, and FBI covered up that pedophile network.
Right. How about your comments, Nick?
Well, it's interesting. Henry talks about Craig Spence, who was a very powerful individual. He took male prostitutes on midnight tours of the White House. He had major intelligence connections. He was welcomed by very upper echelon people in both the Reagan and Bush administrations. And he had a proclivity to be tied up and beaten. So, we talk about William Casey in Henry's book, and William Casey liked to be ritualistically anointed with oils. And he also had, like, erectile dysfunction problems. So that's how Henry became aware that he was his patron, because the escorts would talk about William Casey. And so, yes, a number of these very powerful people do have kind of abnormal sexual portals and picadillos.
Right. Are both of you familiar with the documentary Boys for Sale? Did you ever run across that in your studies and research?
I have not, no.
Oh, okay. How about you?
No,
Henry?
I haven't.
Okay, well, we've included that as part of our site as far as notes go and everything. It came out of Houston a number of years ago. And Tom Philpott, a professor at the University of Texas, and Mark McKinnon, who was the editor of the Daily Texan at the time, reviewed it on a local. Now, there is another subject, too, the Belgium scandal. Are you familiar with anything like that back a few years ago in Belgium, where there was a pedophile network over there that became public to a degree? Are you familiar with that?
Yes,
no.
You're talking about the Dutroux scandal, and I'm familiar with the Dutroux
scandal. Yes, sir.
And then the Seville scandal is happening right now in the United Kingdom. So, and both the Seville and Dutroux networks were linked to blackmail and upper echelon people in both the Belgian and UK establishment and politics. So what we've talked about in Henry's book isn't, I don't think, an aberration. It's politics as usual.
Right. The it's come to attention that there have been some statements by some very important people, and I think some of the statements are saying things like, well, sex with children is okay or something. And There have been several statements by different people representing different foundations and so forth. Have you been have you noticed that, some of the public opinion is coming up like this just lately? It's just been publicized recently. What are your comments?
Well, I haven't noticed that, but the thing about Henry's book is it's his perspective running an escort service in Washington, D.C., and he didn't provide children, and he actually stayed as far away from that as possible. And the import of Henry's book is that he witnessed the blackmailing, or he knew about the blackmailing of power brokers, and he knew about Craig Spence's nefarious activities. And I think that that's a really important topic to stay on as far as when we're talking about Henry's book. Because after all, it's called, the subtitle is The Politics of Sex, Lies, and Blackmail. So I think that's where the import of Henry's book is it elucidates
right.
The blackmailing of politicians.
What would you add to that, Henry? What could you add to that?
Well, I think blackmail is much more common than one would believe. And, of course, D.C. is, they have a greater dexterity to cover up scandals and crimes that lend themselves to blackmail in D.C. due to the fact the Capitol's law enforcement is exclusively controlled by various branches of the federal government. The U.S. attorney for D.C., who prosecutes all D.C. crimes, is appointed by the president. The FBI and Secret Service are minions of the executive branch, and Congress controls the budget of D.C.'s Metropolitan Police Department. So I think the federal government has much greater ability to cover up scandals and crimes in D.C. than any other place.
Right.
Henry, get into your experience about blackmail and the integral role that it plays in the American political process.
Well, and as I said earlier, in my experience, blackmail plays an integral role in the American political process. But blackmailers and their blackmail targets would never divulge such misconduct for the obvious reasons. Blackmailers are subjected to criminal prosecution, and the blackmail targets would be subjected to either prosecution or persecution for that conduct. And it doesn't come out till years later. And present-day blackmail, recent whistleblowers have also discussed the blackmail of American politicians. Sybil Edmonds, a former FBI translator, has disclosed that the FBI routinely collected information that enables it to blackmail American politicians. And NSA whistleblowers Russell Tice and Bill Binney, they've also disclosed that the NSA has collected information on American politicians that could make them susceptible to blackmail. So I think there's blackmail is much more prevalent than we believe if we look around at what they're doing today with Sybil Edmonds.
And I think that the media has reported on some of the things that Edmonds, Tice, and Binney have said. And actually, Tice was one of the sources for the New York Times articles in 2005 that reported on the NSA's illegal data mining of Americans. However, the mainstream media has refused to report on their allegations regarding the potential blackmailing of American politicians. So it's kind of telling that these mainstream media outlets will will cherry pick information from Sybil Edmonds or Russell Tice or Bill Binney, but yet they refuse to talk about the blackmail that they brought up, or the potential blackmailing of American politicians. It shows how skewed the media is with regards to this subject.
Is it the attitude, sort of a social and moral relativist attitude, that you just sort of stay away from these sexual topics, or what? What would your thoughts be there?
Well, I think that a lot of people in the media are potentially blackmailed. With my research and Spence's activities, I think really emphasize this, that people in the media are as susceptible to blackmail as politicians. Because if you've got a wayward political system, you also need a wayward media, because the media is ultimately the watchdog of the political system. So the media has to be compromised as well as the political process. And I think it's very telling that five corporations own approximately 90% of the media that Americans imbibe. So you've got these five titanic corporations that provide the vast majority of the media to Americans. And another thing is, these titanic corporations don't want to upset the government because the government could break them up at any time with antitrust lawsuits. So at this point, we have a synergy between the media and the government. And it's a synergy that ultimately undermines American democracy.
Do you think that this synergy will ever be reformed to any degree? What do you think, Henry?
Well, I think the blackmail that enterprise that's ensnared numerous D.C. power brokers ran by CIA, and I think the Washington Post, look at Operation Mockingbird. That's been going on since 1948. There's the book, Catherine the Great. Journalist Deborah Davis showed that Ben Bradley was producing CIA propaganda as far back as the 1950s. And so I think that it's much more prevalent than we believe.
Henry makes a great point.
Yeah.
In 1948, the CIA initiated Operation Mockingbird. And what Operation Mockingbird was its operation to influence the media. And the first person that they conscripted to help them do this was Philip Graham, who was the publisher of the Washington Post. And he helped ingratiate the CIA into various publications. And also, Philip Graham stocked the Washington Post with writers and editors who had intelligence backgrounds. And as Henry was saying, Ben Bradley, the famous editor-in-chief of the Washington Post who supposedly broke open Watergate, he was really instrumental in covering up the CIA blackmail enterprise that enmeshed Henry. And he has a major CIA background, and he's lied about his CIA background. As Henry said, there was a book called Catherine the Great, which was about Catherine Graham, who took over the Washington Post after Philip Graham committed suicide. And in that book, she discusses Ben Bradley producing CIA propaganda in the 1950s during the Cold War. And Ben Bradley put a tremendous amount of heat on the publisher of Davis's book, Harcourt Brace, and actually Harcourt Brace actually withdrew the book from publication and it was pulped. And Deborah Davis filed a number of Freedom of Information Act requests in the government that corroborated that Ben Bradley had been writing CIA propaganda. So ultimately, Ben Bradley told some extremely blatant lies about his CIA affiliations.
Right. Are you familiar with the book the Family by Jeff Charlotte?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
What would be your comments? This is about a very religious neocon type of. I think he puts forward the idea that maybe this particular religious group on the right is portraying Jesus as a neocon or a warrior for democracy and freedom. What would be some of your comments about the family involved in this overall scheme of things?
I don't know if the family really played an integral role in what Henry and I wrote a book about. Henry and I wrote a book about his experience running a gay escort service. And in Washington D.C., so I don't really see how the family would be applicable to the story that Henry and I have put together, have collaborated on.
Well, my question then is to Henry: were there any high-profile religious leaders that were part of your customer base or not?
Well, there was. Yes, when there would be religious conventions in Washington D.C., we would be very, very busy.
So y'all really did a lot land off at business back then, huh? At certain times.
That's right. I could, when there was a religious convention in town, we would be extremely busy.
Well, do you think that people away from home, they just start acting different ways, don't they, huh?
Well, I think so. I think when people are away from home, they have a tendency to. When they're somewhere where they're not known, I think they have just let their hair down a little.
Yeah. And what would be some of your comments on that, Nick, Do you have you experienced similar things or not?
Well, I think when people are out of town, when the cat's away, the mouse will play, so to speak. But I think that they're probably engaged in similar activities if they live in the heartland or wherever they might live. But when people are away at conventions, it's been shown that they, as Henry said, let their hair down. And I would say that that happens quite a bit.
As far as all of this loss of our privacy and, you know, our personal privacy, do you think that this whole thing, this blackmail type of dynamic has moved to another level here that's much more sophisticated and, you know, from a higher level? What do you think, Henry?
Well, I think it would be much more sophisticated today because back when when Craig was alive, it was pretty old technology. I think today cameras are much smaller and it's much easier to record people. So I think there's probably, it's much easier to do it today and it's probably done on a much bigger level.
And earlier, right. And earlier I commented on Sybil Edmonds, Russell Tyson, Bill Binney, and whistleblowers. And Russell Tyson, Bill Binney worked for the NSA and they've talked about unbelievably sophisticated ways in which the government mines data from individuals. So you've got, now that we're in the digital age, you've got, I think, data mining or surveillance going up to the next level just because of the technology involved today.
Yeah, Henry, you seemed to insinuate or state earlier that the government at the time, the Justice Department, knew a lot about these pedophilia whatever networks and stuff, but would not actually move on those. Well, today they probably have even more information. What would be your comments there?
Well, they were aware of what I knew because I did share that with them. I was debriefed for several days by the government, by the federal, the FBI, and the Secret Service. So they were very aware of it, and I think they acted to cover up everything that I told them.
Right. And how about, Nick, some of your experiences in the past? The Franklin cover-up or scandal, there was another book John DeCamp wrote that I picked up years ago. Now, that was just a scandalous operation there, but did it overflow into the Washington, D.C. area during this time that that Henry was operating this escort service?
Yes, but that book really didn't get into the D.C. side of that particular King and Spence operation. My book delineated that far better than I believe than the Franklin cover-up. But yes, it did. It was the Franklin scandal was written at about the same time that Henry was operating an escort service in D.C. That's how Henry and I eventually met, is because he was aware of Craig Spence, and I knew that Craig Spence was an integral part of not only the network that I wrote about, but also the blackmailing of politicians. And
right.
And that's how Henry and I became acquainted with each other, is because I interviewed him about that.
Right. Henry, on your operation of your escort service, when dignitaries, foreign dignitaries, would come to Washington, D.C., was any of your experience involved with any of these providing escort services to foreign dignitaries?
Well, I would say so, because Craig Spence had a real connection with the Japanese, and Craig would have these lavish parties at his house. He would call for 5-10 escorts to be over there, the most beautiful ones we had. So Craig was always entertaining high-profile people. That was very common for him, probably several times a week he would have these parties. So there were lots of people there that were well-known.
So there were Japanese there, but were there any Europeans coming in from UK or Seville and those types of people or not?
Well, I don't really know about that, but Craig had lots of foreign people at his house often. He entertained just about everybody. It would look like a who's who at his parties.
What would be your comments on this recent scandal with Epstein and so forth? He had his own island out there. What would be your comments there, Henry?
Well, I've written on Epstein, and Epstein is very similar to what we've seen before with Seville and also with the Franklin scandal. Epstein, although it's kind of interesting, King and Spence were providing little boys to Republican power brokers, and Epstein was providing little girls to Democratic power brokers. I guess there is partisan politics in the United States of America. But Epstein was covered up in a manner that was similar to what was covered up in Washington, D.C. with Henry. Epstein did end up spending 13 months in a county jail, but he molested scores of young girls. So, and he was protected in a very big way by the, it's obvious. I've got the dialogues or some of the emails between an Epstein attorney and the assistant U.S. attorney for the district of the Southern District of Florida. And it's very obvious that Epstein was given unbelievably preferential treatment. And his crimes were covered up.
Yeah. Would any further elaboration on that, Henry?
No, I think Nick summed it up very well.
But so we're looking at something that that men, was it primarily in your escort service there in Washington, it was men that were ordering services. Is that correct?
That's right. I ran a gay escort service.
Were they primarily white men, Caucasian-type men, or what? What was the demographics on that?
That's right. They were primarily white men.
Okay. And they – okay. And one of the most sensational stories that could come to your mind would be what exactly about your past experiences in D.C.? What insight or story could you tell us about?
Well, Nick, Craig Spence had some great parties at his house. He was a great entertainer, and he would have celebrities there, politicians. It truly would look like who's who, and his parties were something else to see. I mean, he spared no expenses. He would give lavish gifts, but I think his late night tour of the White House is probably the biggest thing, that the most popular thing that's been talked about, is Craig Spence having so much power that he could arrange a midnight tour of the White House
for male escorts. Craig Spence arranged a midnight tour of the White House on a number of occasions, and even included gay escorts that Henry employed, which is kind of interesting.
Well, did they come back with souvenirs, or did Craig Spence, did he display some kind of a special plate that he'd gotten out of the White House, or what, in his mansion there? What was that about?
Well, he did have the Truman China. He did have a lot of things from the White House, but again, this man was very connected. He was protected by the Secret Service. He had an entourage of protection. He would had earpieces that he talked through. I mean, he was a very protected man, always had an entourage of protection.
I think it's interesting. Craig Spence had like a Praetorian guard around him. And if you're blackmailing very powerful people, that's a very dangerous business, because powerful people generally have access to their own thugs. So Craig Spence had to be protected, and he had Secret Service agents and others protecting him because he was blackmailing some of the most powerful people in the country. And if you do that, it can really truncate your longevity. So Spence had this Praetorian Guard that was always with him. And whenever Henry went over to Spence's house, he would always be vetted by a Secret Service officer or one of Spence's bodyguards before he even entered the house.
So Henry, they would pat you down or what before you could enter the house to search you for a weapon or what?
They would always look over you. They were very protective of him. You couldn't get in. That's right. They would.
Now getting back to these White House tours, were there not some children that were involved in the scandal out there in the Franklin scandal that actually experienced tours through the White House or not?
Well, there was one who came forward, but two of Henry's escorts were actually given late night tours of the White House, and that's what the Washington Times reported on. And that made the big headlines, was that, and Henry didn't believe it initially, but then it was confirmed by the Washington Times. So it was mostly Craig Spence liked to show off to the gay escorts that Henry employed. As I said earlier, he took two on midnight tours of the White House.
Now, these stories were put out, published by Washington Times, which is considered to be, what, the conservative newspaper in the area versus Washington Post, or what?
That's right. The Washington Times is thought to be the most conservative, I suppose. But
the Washington Post... The Washington Times was trying to break this story open, which is kind of ironic because it was happening under a conservative Bush 1 administration. And it was the Washington Post. I mean, the Washington Times really collected a lot of corroboration about Craig Spence's blackmail operation, collected a lot of information about how Spence has conducted his activities, collected corroboration that that Spence was indeed a CIA asset. And the Washington Post just rolled over all the reportage by the Washington Times. And the Washington Post even got the New York Times and the LA Times to jump on its bandwagon and kick the Washington Times to the side of the curb. So ultimately, you have three entities. You've got the Washington Post, you've got the New York Times, and you've got the LA Times that are saying that everything that is being reported by the Washington Times is just erroneous and made up or sensationalized. And we saw this happen in the Gary Webb story, Dark Alliance, where the Washington Post, the New York Times, and also the LA Times all teamed up to just destroy Gary Webb's career after he wrote that series, Dark Alliance, that showed that there was a connection between the CIA, the Contras, and the cocaine epidemic in Los Angeles.
Well, the Washington Post was connected to the CIA. Is that pretty well accepted at this time, back during that period?
Well, we've talked about that, yes. The Washington Post and the CIA have had a marriage for a number of years. As Henry talked about earlier and I talked about earlier, Philip Graham was conscripted by the CIA in Operation Mockingbird, and that was the CIA's plan to infiltrate the media. And Philip Graham helped the CIA make a foothold into other media, including the Washington Post. And Philip Graham stocked the Washington Post with writers and editors who had intelligence backgrounds. And as I said earlier, Ben Bradley, the Washington Post executive editor, who was the executive editor when the Washington Post was covering up the crimes of Craig Spence, the intelligence connections of Craig Spence, and the blackmail of Craig Spence, he also had long-standing CIA connections.
Right. I've got a question for both of you. You know, this false memory syndrome, what would be your comments on that? Are you familiar with that? That basic they call it a syndrome. But I think it surfaced out of these problems, these scandals at these nurseries or these kindergartens.
Yes,
and so
I'm familiar with the False Memory Syndrome Foundation. But that's kind of far afield of what Henry's book is about. Henry's book is about blackmail that went down in Washington, D.C. And the False Memory Syndrome Foundation touches on completely different subject matter. So it's not really the issue that we're here to talk about.
Right. Henry, you're quite a pilot, is that right? On your Skype you're in front of a helicopter. Do you enjoy flying quite a bit?
Yes, I do. I've flown for the last 30 years and I enjoy aviation quite a bit. I'm a commercially rated pilot with airplane and helicopter ratings.
Right. Now, give us some, we've got about 5 or 6 minutes left. What would be some of your closing comments on, of course, this book has just been published by Tryon-Day, and we have it up there, click on to purchase it through their site and also the Amazon site. But what would be some of your concluding remarks and comments about where you go from here?
Well, the philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche said it, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And that quote is near and dear to my heart because I've endured a number of tragedies in my life, and I was determined not to let them destroy me. In fact, they've galvanized my will and spurred me to reach for success. But Nietzsche should have said, what doesn't kill you often hurts like hell. Plus, I think living a good life is the best revenge, and I've managed to forge a wonderful life for myself despite the repeated persecution by the government and the media.
Right, so you were incarcerated twice in prison, right?
That's correct, yes, sir.
What kind of experiences did you have there during that prison life?
Well, prison is, every day is essentially the same, and survival is the name of the game. The prison industrial complex, it reduces you to a state that's less than human, and I certainly felt less than human while I was imprisoned. But the government strips you of your possessions and status in society and reduces you to a number. You're provided with three hots and a cot, and most of the inmates were aware of my status as a D.C. madam because of the newspaper reportage on me. And the inmate population, they didn't overly embrace homosexuals. And I was really treated like a Martian or something very strange. And many of the inmates were calling me punk, which is inmate jargon for queer or faggot. So adjusting to life in prison was very difficult for me. But after my imprisonment, I returned to college, earned a master's degree in integrated marketing from West Virginia University. And I think if the government offered prisoners an education, there would be more success stories like mine.
Right. So, and the second imprisonment or incarceration, that was not even close to being correct in any way, was it not?
That's right. It was for an income tax issue for someone that I didn't even know. This is a person who had an income tax issue in 1982, and I didn't even meet this person until after 98 or 97. So that was a rather interesting story.
But was that punishment for being involved in with the CIA there and not conforming and providing them what they wanted, or what? What were your comments?
Well, I was told a year before any of that happened that I would be returning to prison. I didn't believe it, and it turned out that Nick was right. That did indeed happen.
Right. Nick, Brian, what would be your comments, closing comments, about what we need to do and carry on from here? We've got about 3.5-4 minutes left.
Well, I think Henry's book, Confessions of a D.C. Madam, The Politics of Sex, Lies, and Blackmail, is a really good book because it shows that Washington, D.C. is essentially a present-day Babylon, and Americans have a collective naivete about the depravity of their politicians, who are endowed with a potent alchemy of power, arrogance, and lust. An alchemy that fluently translates into extramarital affairs or illicit sexual encounters. And I think Bill Clinton and Elliot Spitzer are merely two examples of the innumerable politicians who have put their careers and families online because of their sexual addictions or compulsions. So I think that this book gives Americans not only an insight into the compulsions and addictions of our power elite, but also how it makes them susceptible to blackmail.
Right. The book is a fine book. I recommend it highly. Again, it's entitled Confessions of a D.C. Madam, The Politics of Sex, Lies, and Blackmail. And I've been on this subject for about 20, 25 years, not specifically these sexual topics that we're talking about tonight. But I've been looking into these kinds of things for about 35 years, you know, the New World Order and all that. I did try to open it up a little bit, and I think I really did respect and, you know, your insights and some of your statements and comments, both of you. So I want to thank you very much for being with us this evening. And Henry Vinson, you've done a fine job in exposing this system in Washington, D.C., and also Nick Bryan, your co-authoring. There is one closing question I would have for you. The people that rise to the top of our political system because of the money system and all that, is there some kind of a sociopath or psychopathic type of personality types that reach for the for these high positions of powers? Or what would you think?
There was a really good book written about that. It's called Elite Deviants, and it shows that a number of our elites are hardwired for sociopathic and deviant behavior. It's a very good book, Elite Deviants. It was written about 20 years ago.
Okay, and how about you, Henry, Vincent? What would your comments be on the type of personality or psychology of some of these people?
Well, I think a lot of very powerful people think they can get away with anything, and obviously they do, because all of this was covered up and very little of it was ever mentioned.
Yeah, is there an arrogance there that you found some of your customers exhibited, a sort of a power and arrogance attitude or personality or what?
I think so. When one member of Bush's cabinet said to me, "I can withstand a background investigation, can you?" So,
really?
Yes. And then it wasn't very long until I was had a search warrant served on me, my sister, my mother simultaneously. So
in other words, this second time that they went after you, they told you ahead of time that they're going to go back to prison, right?
That's right. I was told by Nick Bryant. But the first time,
really?
I was talking about the first time in D.C. at a member of the cabinet.
And Nick, what were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say that, yes, Henry has certainly experienced the ire of the power elite and how the rules are very different for them. And there was grand jury that walloped Henry with a 43-count RICO indictment when he was in Washington, D.C., and Henry was looking at 295 years in prison, and that grand jury completely exonerated Craig Spence of any illicit activities, which is kind of mind-boggling considering all the illicit activities that Craig Spence was into. So it really shows that there was a very corrupt government apparatus that went after Henry, And it made Henry the fall guy for a sprawling conspiracy in which there was a two-sided justice. The rich and the powerful, nothing happened to them concerning what
right.
Craig Spence was into, but Henry had to pay the ultimate price. He had to go to prison.
Well, thank you very much this evening, Henry Vinson and Nick Bryan. Both of you spent a lot of time and a lot of labor on this book, and we certainly do appreciate you in writing it, and we'll certainly recommend this book to anyone. Thank you very much for being with us this evening.
Thank you.
Thank
it's
you.
Been a pleasure.
Thank you. Good night.